Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. If I asked you to tell me where the first commercial vineyard took place in America, most people would guess California, Napa Valley. But that's not it. It was right here in Jessamine County, Kentucky, way back in 1799. We're going to talk about that with the owner of First Vineyards here in Jessamine County, Tom Bell. We'll do that right after this word from the Farmers Bank of Jessamine County.
Beginnings are important, especially when it comes to building a future. From start to finish, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County will be with you every step of the way. Whether it's a house, a car, a college fund, or saving for retirement, it all starts here. Stop by any of our four convenient Jessamine County locations today or visit us on the web at myfarmersbank.net. Banking with friends and neighbors, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County, equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Well, good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you on this Saturday morning as we continue to learn about our county, people, places, and things. And there's one thing that a lot of people in this county, I think, may realize exists, but I don't think they realize the history behind it, and that is one of the vineyards that we have in our county. With us today is a gentleman who owns that vineyard. It's called First Vineyard, and it's down at the end of Sugar Creek Pike, and we're going to talk more about that in a moment. Tom Beal, good morning.
Well, good morning, Doug. Thank you for having me on your show.
Glad to have you. You know, a lot of people, and we discussed this because we were together a couple of days ago talking about all this. A lot of people, I think, anywhere in this country that you would ask where did commercial vineyards start would probably say California. That's just what they think. They think of Napa Valley. You think, well, that's where it is. But they're wrong, because the first commercial vineyard, and I hope I'm saying this right, the first commercial vineyard in the United States was right here in Jessamine County. Correct?
That's correct. The first vineyard and winery was right here in Jessamine County.
Right here. And is it exactly the property where you are located right now?
Well, that's correct. It's the exact site where it was started.
It's amazing. All right. Tell us that history. What happened back in the late 1700s to get that all started, and we'll eventually get to current day with you guys?
I think it all starts actually over in around Montreux, Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
A fairly young fellow by the name of Jean-Jacques de Fur wanted to come to America because he'd been told by some French soldiers who had returned from the Revolutionary War that America was a land of plenty, except they didn't have wine.
And they needed plenty of wine.
That's right. They were very used to that. So, realizing this, he decided that he would probably come to the United States. And, mm-hmm. in fact, he did in 1796.
Mm-hmm.
He spent a little over 2 years touring the United States. What was the United States at that time? All through New England.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went through Ohio River, the Kentucky River, parts of the Mississippi River. And he just found out there was not anyone actually commercially producing wine for sale to the public.
And, you know, back then you said what was then the United States. You didn't go much past the Mississippi. That was, at that time, that was about as far as it reached. So he couldn't find it was being done. He had been told the truth.
Oh, yeah, he'd been told the truth. He actually was sent on several wild goose chases.
Yeah.
People say, well, we heard that there might have been a Jesuit missionary out around the Mississippi River that was doing wine production. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he went there, and it wasn't
true.
There
wasn't.
So, I mean, he spent 2.5 years, and he just finally came to the realization, there's nobody doing this.
Yeah.
And I think the reason he was probably doing that part of it was no reason to reinvent the wheel. If somebody's got a vineyard going and a winery going, you know the grape is going to grow here.
Right.
And you know the processing they use. Even though he was a third-generation wine person over in Switzerland,
mm-hmm.
He wanted to see what was going on here. This was new territory.
Yeah. How did he find this place?
Well, you know, that was really a question to me. I thought, as much as he traveled over the different river valleys, why in the world did he end up here in Kentucky?
Yeah.
And it wasn't until a few years ago that I found out probably what was going on. A gentleman who's a historian in Garrett County, Fred Simpson. Fred is a really great historian. He's done a tremendous amount of research about Garrett County.
Yeah.
I met him one day, and he said, are you the fellow that's got the vineyard and winery over there in Jessamine County? I said, yes. He said, well, do you think Quantico had anything to do with it? And I said,
Quantico?
What is a Quantico? And he said, "Oh, Tom," he said, "that was a big shipping port." Well, he got to explaining to me about Quantico. Well, come to find out, there's five roads in Garrett County that led down to Quantico.
Yeah.
There was two here in Jessamine County that led to a ferry that took you to Quantico.
Yeah.
So if you had farm produce in central Kentucky,
that's
you were
where
going
you
to
go
to Quantico. That's right. So DeFuhr probably recognized two things. First of all, you had all the people coming and going, mm-hmm. which meant you had a populace that could support a winery.
Yeah.
The other thing was you could put wine on a flatboat, take it to New Orleans, and it could go anywhere in the world from that
yeah.
point. Then it made all the sense in the world. It would be almost like, okay, I'm going to put a restaurant in a mall parking lot.
Right.
So I think he realized that while there was probably other places that could have given him the same soil, solar orientation, and the belief, first of all, that there had to be a large body of water around a vineyard. I mean, he met those criteria, I'm sure, in several places, but there was nowhere that you had the populace coming and going, and the fact that you could ship your wine to anywhere in the world.
So because of that, this winery and this designation could have easily been in Garrett County soil. It just so happened this place where you are, I guess, was available to him.
It was available, that's
okay.
correct. By the time that he had got there in 1799, actually there had been commerce going on there for almost 15 years in Garrett County.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been very difficult to acquire property right around that immediate
right.
area, whereas there was about 633 acres readily available on
yeah.
the Jessamine County
yeah.
side.
Of course, people need to remember that Garrett, in fact, one of the first three counties in Kentucky.
That's right.
We were a part of Fayette County, which was a part of Virginia
right.
back then at some point. So, yeah, that I guess a lot of people might think, well, you know, Jessamine County, is it because of the climate? Is because it's not. It's probably because of the availability to get his product out where he needed to get it.
That's
and that
right.
makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it
yeah.
met all the other criteria, too, for the soil
sure.
and the river and solar orientation. It met all those criteria, but it met a criteria probably he didn't have on other areas.
Yeah. All right, so he buys his property. I'm going to do it, he says to everybody. What happened then? Because there was some stuff that happened with surveying and chartering and all that. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. When my partner Bobby Carpenter and I were doing the research, we took that property, that chain of title, all the way back to Virginia, and we found out that it was one of the Daniel Boone surveys.
Mm-hmm.
He originally surveyed the property back in 1783.
Mm-hmm.
And when we looked at the deed that was granted, it was signed by Patrick Henry,
mm-hmm.
who was then the governor of Virginia.
Right.
And when the DeFuhrs finally actually acquired the property, they, like most people, didn't have enough money to start a big endeavor.
Yeah.
So they formed a corporation.
Even back then?
Even back then.
Wow.
It was a matter of fact, it was the first corporation in the state of Kentucky.
Really?
That's correct. And so in order to get the money, they put these stock out,
mm-hmm.
and there was 99 people
mm-hmm.
who purchased stock in
mm-hmm.
it and put the money up for it. Each stock was $50 a piece.
Big money.
Big money
back
then.
Big
That's exactly
money.
Right. And there was it was almost like a who's who of America involved in the thing. Henry Clay was the attorney and one of the stockholders.
Wow.
Both of our congressmen, John Brown and John Edwards, were also stockholders. The United States Secretary of the Treasury, George Bibb, was one of the members
mm-hmm.
of it. The first dean of law, George Nicholas, who, by the way, wrote the Kentucky Constitution.
Yes, who Nicholasville is named after.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
He was one of the members of it.
Really?
Yeah. The dean of law and the dean of medicine at Transylvania. There was 9 members of the United States House of Representatives. It, like I say, it truly was a who's who in America. They really saw an opportunity here. The triad of wealth at that time. If you could produce wine,
mm-hmm.
silk or olive oil,
mm-hmm.
you were just about guaranteed to be wealthy.
Yeah, well, you think about our history overall. I mean, other than water, wine, I guess, is the one beverage that has, you know, it's listed historically in the Bible. I mean, that's just, it's been here, like you say, with olive oil and silk. And those things, it's almost like bread. It's just been around since the beginning of time, almost.
That's right. They've definitely dated the manufacture of wine back over 6,000 years now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an old-time commodity.
Right.
And a necessary commodity in many places because of the poor quality of water.
And that's something a lot of people don't think about. You know, there are places in this world, unfortunately, that do not have water fit to drink. It's hardly fit to do anything in. And unfortunately, the people go ahead because they have to, necessity. And that's an interesting part of it right there, to think that that happens in our world.
It really is, and unfortunately still exists today in many places in the country, not in our country, but in a third world country,
right,
where the water is such poor quality. Well, like I say, it's been a long time stay for humans, and it will continue to be.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. When we started here, there was only a production around 3,000 gallons. And today, there's billions of gallons.
Oh, I guess.
And, you know, what started out as the first one in the United States, now there's thousands of wineries throughout the United States.
Did he, if you know, when he produced this wine, do you think it was mainly for sale in America, or did he ship a lot back to the homeland?
No, they really couldn't have produced enough, I don't think, to be shipped out.
Yeah.
It could have been readily consumed and sold right here pretty easily.
Yeah.
Because at that time, if you wanted wine, it had to be imported from probably France or Portugal.
Yeah.
And that was a very expensive thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's why sometimes you hear people talk about associating wines with snobs. I think that's not true, I don't think, today, obviously.
Right.
But I think during that period of time, the only people who could have afforded wine was people who had a considerable amount of wealth.
Yes, yes.
So they're probably associated.
Yeah, I'd say
you're right. This guy's rich, so he can get wine.
Right, I'd say you're right.
So I think that's what happened, but I think now it's become a very social thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a friends and family and fun type thing.
Do you think, and we're kind of getting off a little bit of tangent here, the process, is it pretty much the same as it's been for all these thousands of years?
You know, absolutely. It's I think the thing that, of course, has changed is now the technology. I know one of the things, like an airlock, which is a thing that allows carbon dioxide to escape from a vessel during fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we use airlocks. Back during this period of time, in order to let carbon dioxide escape and prevent oxygen from getting in, DeFuhr would take grape leaves and put them in the bunghole of the barrel and put a rock on it.
Really?
Well, whenever the pressure was great enough in the barrel, it would cause the leaf to burp.
And that amazing.
But I mean,
but that's the way you did it. It worked.
It worked. And like I say, the fermentation process and everything is all the same, but now we have high technology of filtration.
Right.
We have chemicals that can retire, you know, some spoilage.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's pretty much the same.
Pretty much the same.
Right.
Before we go on a little bit more about the wine itself, I want to ask about you guys. Now, tell us a little history of you and your wife and how you guys got to be in the business to start with. Where are you from? How you got to be in the business? And how you made it to First Vineyard? How did that all come about?
Boy, that's a long story. I don't know
okay.
We can cover it. I'm a Kentuckian. I was born and raised over in Clark County on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
Worked for the police department in Metro for 25 years and retired.
In Lexington?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What about that?
And after I retired, I couldn't stay retired. I was too active. So
yeah.
I had a small construction company, and I was doing a lot of excavating, building roads. And I was building a road for the gentleman that owned the property, and it was late fall. And I asked him if it would be okay if I rode the four-wheeler around the property, and he said I could.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I was riding back through there, I came upon the point where the vineyard was. And, of course, I didn't know it was a vineyard then,
mm-hmm.
but it was very beautiful. I could overlook the entire river valley.
Yes, yes.
And I thought, God, this is a beautiful spot.
Yeah.
So I went back, asked him if he'd be willing to sell. Make a long story short, he didn't for 2 years, but after about 2 years, I was able to purchase the property,
mm-hmm.
unknowing to me that it was a First Vineyard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you didn't know?
No, I did not know it.
Wow. Now, had you ever made wine before this?
Never.
So this was a brand new thing, and you thought he was nuts when he came home, didn't you? I know. His wife is here with us, folks, and I bet she looked at him like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and she still does. But I purchased a property, and it's sort of one of those things like a dog chasing a car. I've caught it, now what do I do with it?
Yeah.
So I happened to run into a lady who had a trail riding facility in Madison County,
mm-hmm.
and she had lost a lease on the farm and was looking for a place. And I said, boy, have I got a place for you. For about 14, 15 years, they done trail riding there.
Yeah.
And then we found out, in 2002, we found out about it being the very first vineyard and wine.
Do you remember how you found that out?
Oh, very much so. Thanks to a very dear friend of mine, Don Graham, who owned property downriver from me.
Yeah.
He was a real wine connoisseur. He'd done investment wines and such.
Yeah.
Well, he was up in Bloomington, Indiana at Butler Winery. Jim and John Butler, father and son, owns the winery, and the father was a retired historian. And back about probably 18, 19 years ago, he just got interested. I wonder where it started here in the United States.
Yeah.
Well, he and his son done a tremendous amount of wonderful research. They later wrote a book called Indiana Wine.
Mm-hmm.
In that, they devoted probably a couple chapters to the start of the industry in the country.
Mm-hmm.
They knew who started it. They knew where it was from. They knew it was in Jessamyn County. They knew it was on the Kentucky River, but they could never actually put the property on the ground. Well, when Don was there, he was flipping through this book, and he saw a survey of the property in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very unique piece of property. It's called the Big Bend of the Kentucky River. It's the southernmost point of the Kentucky River in central Kentucky.
Yeah.
Well, he said, is that the Kentucky River? And they said, yeah. He said, I know the guy that owns that property. They said, you've got to be kidding.
Oh, my goodness.
They'd been looking for it for about 14, 15 years.
Wow.
Since that time, we have found out people from Switzerland have been here looking for it. Some people here in the United States have been combing the river looking for it.
Wow.
And that was sort of the Rosetta Stone.
I guess, yeah.
Once we found this survey, we were able to take an aerial photograph and take a transparency of the survey and overlay it so we knew exactly.
Matched up perfect.
That's right. It matched up. And then when we ran the title search on the property,
yeah.
We got to that piece of property that it says commonly called the Vineyard Tract.
Man, isn't that amazing how that all came about? And you just thought you were going to let people ride horses on it.
Exactly. I was just trying to think of something to do with it. I was wanting to put an A-frame out there just to get away to on the weekends. But that's how it all started in 2002. And Bobby and I started doing more research, and we found out Thomas Jefferson got wine from there. James Madison got wine from there. So the Library of Congress has a lot of these correspondence. So we were able to get copies of the letters thanking them from the wine. So we've done another probably 4+ years of research to get it all put together.
It's amazing how this all came together. It's even more amazing, folks, to think that it's all happened right here in our little county. How did you learn how to do it? Now, you had done this, and you'd never been in the business. Well, how did that expertise come about?
A steep learning curve.
Yeah, I guess so.
Actually, I realized we didn't know enough about it, and Bobby and I hired a consultant.
Okay.
And Brandon O'Daniel, and Brandon was got his master's at Eastern, no, it was at UK, actually, mm-hmm. Viticulture Department. And he spent a lot of time with us telling us what grapes would probably grow well here.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent a lot of time trying to track down the grapes that DeFuhr grew.
Yeah.
And we finally, in fact, did find the one he started the industry with.
Really?
Yeah. Everybody thought it was extinct, including us, for a long time. But then I found out where the name of the grape had changed in 1831. I was reading a book about it.
Uh-huh.
And so I called the United States Department of Agriculture Germplasm Depository up in Geneva, New York.
Uh-huh.
And they had two of those vines in their depository.
Wow.
And I was very fortunate. They sent me 40 cuttings. Well, from those 40 cuttings, every year we try to take a few more cuttings and put a few more plants out. So it's been a very long, drawn-out process.
How many do you have down there now? How many plants do you know?
We have probably 400-plus.
And that takes up how many acres?
Well, it's about 3.5 acres what they laid out. And it's sort of neat. He laid it out on terraces just like they were doing in Switzerland.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of steep because when you go down, and I guess we need to stop here for just a moment to try to explain to people where this place is. If you are traveling, folks, on 27 South going from Lexington, from Nicholasville, or 27 North coming from Garrard County, there is a road called Sugar Creek Pike in Jessamyn County, and you turn on that pike. Now, you are not at the very end of Sugar Creek, although you're very close.
We're very close.
But when you get down there, what?
It's 7 miles.
7 miles?
7 miles.
When you get down there, you will see their little sign and a gravel road that goes up the hill. If you go on around to the left, you're going to end up dead end at the river. But, and that's the end. That's Sugar Creek. So you're right at the end over on a little fork. But that's where this is. And you go back the gravel drive and you'll go back in there and you'll find it. And there's more things back there, which we're going to talk about too, than just his winery. But you go back there, and I noticed the other day when I came down to visit you to talk about this, how you're talking about it on that terrace. They go over that hill there and kind of down, and it's just not a lot of flat land. Like, folks, this doesn't look like the orange groves of Florida. It's wholly different than that. Yeah. You know something else my wife and I were talking about? This is an aside, but it brought them in my mind. Is when you drive down Sugar Creek Pike, especially that pike, and some others too down in that area, you almost feel like you're in the hills of Tennessee. But then you go across 27 to the area around Keene and the horse farms and all. Isn't it amazing the difference of landscaping that we have in our county? I think you can find, just other than a desert, I think you can find about anything you want right here in our county, from hills like you are and river to flatland like we have over there. And that's just kind of hard to believe.
Yeah, and it doesn't take very long to make that transition.
No.
You know, you can drive 5 or 6 miles and you go from almost gently rolling pastures to, you know, pretty steep palisades.
Yeah, you're right. All right, so you've got the vineyard down there. Now, I want you to take the opportunity to tell us what all you do have down there, because you're not just raising grapes. You've got a lot of stuff going on down there at that farm.
Yeah, we started out, people would come down for the wine, and they would see the place, and they'd say, we'd like to get married down here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't have a facility to where they could get married if their weather was not very good.
Yeah.
So we built a pavilion so that we could have weddings. Or, you know, now we have corporate events, family reunions, just about any time a large group of people want to get together, we built the pavilion, and it'll hold about 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
And we also went ahead and put in a bed and breakfast, because a lot of people were coming from out of town and a lot of times from out of the country for weddings and different events, and they needed a place to stay.
Now, it's called...
Okay, Sugar Creek Resort is what it's called. Of course, it's right there on the property.
Yeah.
And it's really worked out great, even for the weddings, because we found out there's a lot of people coming from out of town to weddings.
Right.
So we put that in, and then to complement things, to give people a place, it's sort of a very peaceful, tranquil place down there.
Mm-hmm.
And we put in a koi pond, so you could just sit out there and look at the koi swimming. There's a gazebo if you just want to sit out there and look over the river valley and over the vineyard.
Yeah.
So we try to make it a real tranquil place. We not a lot of loud music or anything like that.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about a lot of highways and traffic and that kind of thing.
That's right.
I mean, there's people there, but there's not like that. And a really nice place for people. I don't think a lot of people realize those facilities, even that. They hear vineyard and they don't think about the other things you have down there. And that's very nice that you could put it all in one place, of course.
Now, like I say, it really works good for the public.
Sure.
I mean, like I say, it's a one-stop shop.
Yeah.
And we're getting to where people are even doing destination vacations. They'll come down and stay with us and visit our winery, and then we give them a winery directory of all the wineries in the immediate area.
Yeah.
And they also, you know, we'll tell them about what the bourbon facilities are.
Right.
So there's a lot of people, like I say, now that's making a vacation destination out of it.
And, of course, folks, you may or may not know this either, but Jessamine County, Nicholasville has got the legislative designation of being the Wine and Vine Fest is the official wine festival of Kentucky. And it all makes sense that it would happen here, especially because of the history of your place and the fact that it was the first one. And I think you all even had some kind of an event during that down there at your place, didn't you, at this last...
Well, it was a part of the Wine and Vine thing. It was actually several different things. They had the Wine and Vine Fest, which is basically, you know, going to the winery and tasting the wines. But they also had what they call an equine and wine, where they visited one of the local horse farms here.
Yeah.
And after the horse farms, they also went to two wineries. So that was a bus tour type thing.
Yeah.
And then they had a real wonderful thing that first time I think we've had it was what they called a farm-to-table dinner, and that was where, you know, local produce was being used to actually prepare the foods.
Mm-hmm.
So that seemed to go over quite well. And associated with the Wine and Vine, there was the art was involved.
Yes.
That was neat. I mean, you know, you could walk around and look at all the local artists, which we've got some very talented ones.
Yes, we do.
Even I didn't know that until I got to walk around. I thought, boy, that's some really classy stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, there was music there. It was just it was a really nice weekend thing.
Yeah.
So it was a nice thing.
How many different wines do you all produce now?
We actually have the four different varieties of grapes that we can actually produce our wines.
Mm-hmm.
The fruits we have to purchase, and some of the grapes we have to purchase. We just are not big enough facilities to supply all the demand for it.
Yeah.
And I know frequently we have people want us to ship, or we'll have a distributor wanting to handle wine, but when you can't even supply enough for yourself, it's tough to do anything more.
So let's see if we can tell us here. You've got, and I don't know a lot about them, red wine, for instance.
We've got red wine.
Do you have different kinds?
Yeah, actually we have the three red wines we have, and most all of them are dry. We have it's a Kentucky Kentucky grape. And we have Chamberson, we have the Norton, and we also have one we call Kentucky River Red.
Okay.
In the whites, we have one that's called the Kentucky River Rapids that will be coming out in a little while. That's a dry wine. And then one of the red wines is sweet as a Concord. And I think everybody around here knows about Concord. Everybody grew a Concord.
Grape jelly, you know. Yeah, Smucker's grape jelly, kind of made out of Concord grapes. You're right.
That's right. Well, your grandmother always had Concord grapes out
there. Yes, that's right.
So, and it makes a pretty good wine, too, actually.
Yeah.
And then we have fruit wines right now. We have the, what they call the apple pie wine, which is made from fermented apples. We have one that is blackberry, and I think about everybody around here made blackberry wine at one time or another, or somebody in their family did. And then we got a couple little novelty wines. One we call cherry cordial. Tastes just about like a cherry cordial piece of candy. So we try to have a little bit of everything. You know, we've got a dry, semi-sweet, and a sweet.
Is it the type grape? I don't know. I'm a real naive about this kind of stuff. Is it the type grape that you produce that causes it to be dry, or
actually, it's the process.
It's the process of how you make it. Okay,
that's correct.
Okay.
When you refer to dry, a lot of people, if they haven't had any experience with it, they're not quite sure about what a dry wine is. Dry just means basically a absence of sugar.
Really? I've learned something now myself. Yeah. I didn't know that. Okay.
A dry wine, generally, if you're looking at it numerically, would probably be 2% or less sugar.
Okay.
Okay, and then you get into a semi-dry, which may be 2% to
4%. So you could almost call it your diet wine.
Yeah,
I guess. A dry wine could be your diet wine.
That's exactly right. That's a low sugar wine.
All right. And then, you have the dessert wines, you said, also.
Right.
Now, one thing you mentioned, too, you said you had one that was getting ready to come out. I take it from that a lot of this stuff is seasonal. I'm assuming there are some grapes that maybe you can only produce certain times. Is that right?
That's not so much it as much the demand. People tend to drink reds more in the winter and whites more in the summer. And I guess because a red is usually a little more full-bodied. It's usually a little bit drier, and it's usually associated with warm foods like steak, lasagna, spaghetti, and things like that. Whereas your whites tend to be more crisp, lemony, citrus type thing.
Yeah.
And it's usually more associated, you know, like with your salads and cold cuts and things like that. And then you've got your novelty wines like our cherry cordial. You know, at Christmas time, everybody likes cherry cordial.
Right. So. That's very interesting. And you know, I've heard of the pairings. I think you mentioned the farm to table. In reading some literature about that, wasn't there some certain wines paired with certain courses? And
that's right.
That's a science in itself, I guess.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. I mean, you know, not everybody's palate's the same, but it tends that a dry wine like a dry red, it will go well with something, a lot of grease, okay, steak. It pairs well with tomato-based things like spaghettis, lasagnas. And then your whites tend to pair better with the light stuff like chicken, fish. And surprisingly enough, even Oriental food.
Really?
It goes pretty good with Oriental food.
What about that?
Unless you get something really off the wall than usual.
Then you have to, what is it called? Stuff called sake. Then you have to go that way, I guess. Well, what's the plan for anything coming up for First Vineyard we should know about? Anything new and exciting you want to tell us about?
Well, you know, like I say, we're going to be putting out the Kentucky River Rapids probably in the next month or so. And the thing that's sort of exciting us is the industry was started by a grape that if we're called the Cape grape, and was later renamed Alexander.
And now that's the one you found the cuttings of in Washington.
Okay. That's right, the germplasm depository.
Right.
This will be the first year we'll be able to bottle that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that will be. Oh, you now is that something you plan on doing from now on? As long as you keep it going,
we'll do it. We'll probably do a commemorative.
But now I would almost be willing to bet. Maybe I'm hoping too high for you here, but I hope I'm right. That could be a very collectible thing, couldn't it? You were talking about this gentleman that was a neighbor of yours, and you said investment wines. That came to mind here. Is this the type of wine that wine collectors will be snatching up just to have?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because probably there'll be roughly maybe 250 bottles. Like I said, it's a very limited production. And what we're going to do, we're going to have the bottles actually etched with our logo on it.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah. And then we'll have each one of them numbered.
That's even cooler.
And the person who purchased it will get a title, just like a car.
Yeah.
And it'll tell who you are and the fact you purchased it, when you purchased it, and what bottle number. And then when we get everything done, I would like to register that with the courthouse.
Yeah.
And that's to prevent counterfeiting.
Sure, right.
That way, you know, like if you have